We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is a Friday, Ides of March edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2.5 hours on this Friday, we take you home and into the weekend and thank the big man upstairs. This has been one of the craziest sports weeks in South Louisiana on record in a long time. And that's saying something for the area where we live. Clint and I coming at you from inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. We'll take a trip out to Nashville. Go down to Baton Rouge to talk LSU baseball in SEC play. A little golf on the menu today, plus Pels NBA basketball. I'll give you the full guest list at the end of this segment. But the big storyline today, LSU in the first opportunity away from the PMAC. First opportunity playing a team with a pulse. Sorry, Vanderbilt. First time doing either of those things without Will Wade. And they fall to a hungry, determined, and let's just say it, improving Florida team. The Gators under Michael White are going to be a serious contender, I think, as a top half, probably top quarter of the SEC next year. But right now, they needed this game. LSU didn't need it to get in. I think they were trying to prove a point early, and they did. The run that Naz Reid, Cavell Bigby Williams, and the Tigers got off to, incredibly impressive. But it could have been even more emphatic. The fact that it wasn't allowed Florida to shoot their way back in late. I'll have some big picture thoughts here in a moment on what this means for LSU seeding. But you want to dive in? You watch the game? Heck, maybe you went over to Marley's. I know that we were pumping that, right? A watch party, and you've had a few? We'd love to hear from you in that case. What'd you think about the ball game and where LSU goes next? 706-0111. What we know is this. The Gators shot 60% in the second half. Yes, they lit it up, and yes, as a team, LSU let them do it. The defense disappeared late. I thought that the team, without Will Wade at the helm, lost some of its accountability and focus in certain moments. And remember exactly what I told you earlier this week on the program, and I said it during the weekly reboot podcast on Sunday night, Monday morning as well. My biggest concern with Tony Benford, I know that the kids respect him. Will they fear him when they have to? In other words, can he jerk the chain and have their neck snap back a little bit? Can he get their attention when they're starting to stray off the path? Will Wade has that fear when he needs it. He can be that a-hole when he needs to be. And I think a lot of the top-level coaches, that's what they have in common. And so Benford, I think at times, couldn't quite pull his guys back from the brink. Now, I don't want to drive that point home too hard because I think that Florida deserves a lot of credit. They played lights out, and they shot that way in the second half. But LSU's defense, it left something to be desired. And they've played some Les Miles-style basketball this year. What do I mean when I say that? When you're up by a lot, the other team will catch up. You take your foot off the gas. When you're trailing, you can always catch up. Les Miles games for so long seem to suck to the middle. Never up by too much, and you're never really out of it. LSU up by, what, the teens, low to mid-teens at some point in the first half, and they couldn't really choke out Florida in this game. Now, my other big issue, I mentioned the defense evaporating. Lost some accountability focus. Some of the play down the stretch of this season, even amidst LSU winning games, and that's why it's hard to teach kids lessons when you win games. But some of the play from Tremont Waters late in games has been questionable. That bowling ball that he let roll all the way to his own three-point line and then got pickpocketed in a huge spot. He's had some boneheaded plays, and he's just too good of a player, right? Usually just too heady of a player. I know he likes to take some chances, but Trey, late, has been somewhat feast or famine. Now, I know that you have to allow him to do him. That's how you get the play late in regulation, under 3 seconds left at Florida, that moved the game in Gainesville to overtime, what, about a week and a half ago? So to allow for his brilliance is also to allow for some of the mind-numbingly dumb things that, for some reason, this guy perpetrates late in games. He's their best player. Don't hear me wrong. But some of the stuff late, it just makes you scratch your head. I'll make two other points with LSU basketball. Naz Reid was great on the stat sheet, 26-14. I will just tell you what one of my scouting acquaintances reached out and texted me today. And I mean college to the pro scouting, not high school to college. A guy that I've known for years who used to pick my brain on the kids coming out of LSU. The text that I got said, and I'll paraphrase, pretty obvious, your guy, Reed, was playing to impress us today. I can't disagree with that. And I know that Jimmy Dykes, if you watch the telecast, hammers Naz Reid. And I mean hammers him. Every time I've seen Jimmy Dykes run color talking about Reed this year, he says the same thing. You're too big. Get your backside down on the block. And Reed did some of that. Reed didn't exclusively do that. I think he showcased the game today that he likes playing. I'm not sure, and I'll give Jimmy Dykes some credit with this particular matchup with Florida, I'm not sure he always played the game that LSU needed him to today. Now hear me. They lost for the first time in a while. I'm not going to poke holes in their chances in March. But as I segue to the big dance in the second half of March and what LSU fans hope is the first week in April, as we segue to that, LSU, with the loss today, solidified that they will not be a 1 or a 2 seed. They have put themselves firmly in 3-line territory with one possible asterisk, with one potential caveat. I'll refer you again to the report that Amy Just, NOLA.com, and the Times-Picayune had earlier in this week, where it was suggested that selection committee members would downvote LSU. And Brian Snow made the comparison of Kenyon Martin in Cincinnati. That's not apples to what's happening now's apples. It's not, right? It's apples to oranges, because the difference in losing the National Player of the Year off your roster and your head coach, it's not the same. But I think we can all agree what we saw today was a team that performed differently down the stretch without Wade on the sideline. So I think a lack of Wade clearly makes a difference. How much? You'll know if LSU falls to the 4-line on Sunday afternoon. That's what I'm telling you. LSU, with the loss today, put themselves in a position to where they could get downvoted by a committee that doesn't like the morality of it, but maybe more importantly, doesn't like a team playing without its head coach. And so I think LSU is likely to land a 3 seed. Can't tell you where, can't tell you who they'll play. But with the loss today, it's at least in the realm of consideration that the committee could drop them to the 4-line. I'm just telling you, if it happens Sunday, don't shoot the messenger. But I think if fair is fair, LSU ought to be a 3 seed. All right, big show today. We're taking a quick recess. When we return, school is in session. We're going out to Nashville, RP3. Raymond Parse III will join us. He covered the game. He had Javonte Smart's press conference after. We'll pick RP3's brain on that next. And that'll be our only guest in hour number one, James Moran, the smartest Moran. The on-deck circle is coming your way. LSU-Kentucky preview, straight up 5 o'clock. Danny Jones talking Louisiana Open. That's right, the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. Danny's going to be with us at 5:45, and then we go in on the Pels, the Lakers, and the NBA. Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots at straight up 6 o'clock. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Pretty good list of guests, huh? And they'll be joining us as we proceed on 103.7 The Game.
Winners
just eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Atlanta music as we head out to Nashville. Clint, we'll learn you at some point. I promise we will. Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in on 103.7 The Game. Let's head out now to that noted hockey city, Smashville, Tennessee. Aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, he is the host of Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parse III. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. I'm doing probably a little bit better than the LSU basketball team and the LSU faithful who made the about 10-hour trek up here to Smashville to see the Tigers get bounced early here in the SEC tournament.
Question, how many games away from the PMAC have you covered of LSU basketball this year?
This was the first.
You see where this is going. LSU fans will politely request that you not go wherever the Tigers are in the big dance, Ray.
I will be willing. I'll be more than willing to appease them on that, brother.
All right, tell them if they're right on this or if they're being a little bit too slanted. I keep getting feedback that the 6-point turnaround, obviously on one possession, there's no doubt it was instrumental. Is that the reason the Tigers lost this one?
I mean, I understand where the LSU faithful will say that, coach. It did not say that afterwards. The bigger problem was is that they gave up 51 points in the second half. I mean, they dominated Florida. They had a 10-point lead at the half. They held Florida to only 34.5% shooting from the field. And in the second half, Florida lit them up for 59.3%. And they just, yes, that 6-point swing was huge. I'm not going to deny that. But there were other things. Tremont Waters had the thing where he rolled the ball up the court to try to conserve time, and then that ended up being a jump ball because he waited too long. They had a few possessions that got thrown out of bounds. They had a couple possessions they come down, and they didn't get off good shots. And Coach even talked about it afterwards. He thought that they came out sluggish in the second half, and they played that way, and they allowed Florida to get back into the game. And anytime you do that against a team that you've gone toe-to-toe with twice already, that has already defeated you once and took you to overtime twice, you can't do that. If you're up on a team like this, they should have just kept attacking, and they didn't execute well in the second half, and that's why they're going home.
Raymond Parse III, our guest. He's got boots on the ground in Nashville, Tennessee, where earlier today LSU lost to Florida in the SEC Conference quarters, 76-73. The performance of Naz Reid was spectacular. Was it what they needed the most? And that's something that I kind of heard from the exterior. People that really stay on the NBA side, I think after this game, have already been kind of chiming in a little bit. Was that to impress the scouts, or was that to help the team get to victory lane? Did you see it that way?
I saw it as victory lane. I mean, we talked about Naz needing to develop and be more aggressive player. I've said it before this year is that when you watch him play, he's still learning how to play in that frame of his. You know, the big guys, the post players, it takes him a little bit longer than the guards do. And he's really developed throughout the season, and he was aggressive. They were aggressive in the paint, okay? And there was a stretch there where they scored, I think, 8 or 10 points in a row in the paint. 3 of them were dunks. And that's the thing that Florida's defense was so great at in the first 2 games, was slowing that down and forcing LSU to try to beat them with their guard play out on the perimeter. LSU came out and just attacked them in the post and was scoring at will in the paint. I mean, in the first half alone, Ben, LSU scored, I want to say, 26 points in the paint. They scored 48 of their 73 points today were in the paint. So they had a good game plan, and Naz had a good matchup, and he took advantage of it. And he played, it was probably the best ball I've seen him play all year. 26 points and 14 boards, both of those were game high. But the problem was is that, you know, he was great. He hit 2 tremendous 3-pointers late to tie the game twice in the final, like, 25 seconds to keep them in it. So the big fellow was out there shooting threes as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he impressed the NBA scouts, but they needed Naz Reid to step up today, and he nearly carried them to a victory.
The Tigers, Ray, had only 2 in double figures. Reid with the 26, and then off the bench, Javonte Smart with 13. Your impressions on his performance on the floor And then in what he said, and I give him a lot of kudos for having the courage to speak to the media after, your impressions of what he said after the ball game.
Well, first of all, I was kind of stunned. You know, they brought Florida out first here inside Bridgestone Arena where they had the media area set up, Ben. And when they cleared off the placards there, they brought on, and the first one they laid down was Javonte's. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. Well, they're just going to let him come right out. It was him and Nas that came out. Kudos to him. You know, he said, you know, when they found out that he was going to be able to play, you know, he admitted that. And, you know, he also told us about, you know, it was Coach Benneford that contacted him to let him know he's played. He was actually in the hotel room. The rest of the team was on the bus. And the rest of the team all got off the bus and ran off the bus to congratulate him to being able to play. I was also impressed by Javonte in that regard. I was also impressed when they were both asked by us in the media, you know, what if you don't have Will Wade? What all this? And they seemed very businesslike, Ben. Both Nas and him both quoted, they were like, you know, Coach Benford is a coach. Like, it's, they have this mentality. They're like, you know, this is all a family. We're going to stay together, and coach is our coach, and we're moving forward. Like, they did not seem distraught by the fact that, you know, Will Wade will not be there or anything like that. They're very focused on each other, and if Coach Benford's going to be the guy, then that's going to be their guy they're going to have, and that's it. It was very business-like afterwards in regards to that.
What was your make on the job that Benford and his staff did today? You looked into that sideline, into what they were doing as far as getting the guys into it, making adjustments. How did that compare to a normal Will Wade coach game?
I thought they did a good job under the circumstances. I think there were times, especially in the second half, that maybe a timeout should have been called here or there, Ben, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe a sequence of plays went maybe just 22 to 25 seconds longer than normal, if that makes any sense. So the reaction time there to make those adjustments, to call those timeouts when the team got a little sloppy with the execution, especially there after about the midway point of the second half, I thought maybe if Will Wade was there, that would have been different. And this is not a knock on Benford by any stretch of the imagination, because you're asking him to, you know, walk into essentially a hornet's nest with a team that has Final Four aspirations. It's a lot to ask of anyone. That said, you know, I also believe this too. The technical that got called on Coach, I've seen Will Wade behave in a way and say things in a way that is far worse than that and not get teed up. So, you know, we talked about it amongst ourselves here in the media that's covering the event, that if Wade was there, that's probably not a technical. And, you know, Coach even said afterwards, he was like, you know, he took accountability for it. He says, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have got the tech. I should have got teed up like that. You know, obviously that was a 6-point swing, which was huge in the game. But he also said, you know, he says, look, the interim coach is not going to get any calls. You know, so I think, you know, once again, a tough situation for him, but I think he handled it well. And, you know, he also was accountable afterwards. You know, he didn't try to blame it on the refs, neither did the kids. It was just like, hey, they let one get away from them, and they owned it, and now they're focused on the tournament.
RP3 back, and good to have him on B2BS. Hey, that's a whole lot of letters, but give me a number. What seed do you think that LSU has earned in the NCAA tournament?
A 3. I think they were a solid 2 to begin the day. I was not one that believed that they were going to be a 1 seed. I just thought it was too hard, especially with the other teams involved, like Kentucky and Gonzaga and Duke. I just didn't think a 1 seed, even if they had won the tournament, was a possibility for them. I thought they were going to be a solid 2, but I thought they needed to win today, Ben, to lock up that 2 seed. Instead, they lose. Florida is probably now going to punch their ticket to the big dance. They were a bubble team, and I think they've earned their spot. And I think you're going to see LSU as a, you know, strong 3 seed. I think that's when Sunday selection comes out. They'll be a number 3 seed for sure.
All right, one more for you, brother. Anything that you would say about not just the energy in that building, but as you walk around town, the LSU faithful that are there, I'm curious what this fan base that's traveling especially is like, knowing everything that's happening back in Baton Rouge with Will Wade, the LSU Athletic Administration, the fact that they've got a team that still is dynamite on the floor. What's that fan base like right now?
I think part of them is a little cautious. I think the statement that occurred I think things are starting to change a little bit, and that's in regards to what Will Wade did yesterday with his statement, Ben. I think that's starting to turn off some of the LSU supporters. I think they view that as, why are you causing a distraction for the team that you claim that you love and that you want to, you know, ride and die for? Why are you doing this on the eve of them playing in the SEC tournament without you? Why are you doing this? And I think that's been some of the questions. I think, you know, some of those people have been irate by Will and how he's handled this. Now, obviously, a large portion of the fan base here is, you know, still furious with Joe Oliva, and they have every, you know, in a lot of ways they have every right to be. I think that's more of carryover from the Les Miles situation than anything still. But I think you're starting to see people kind of turn, not necessarily against Will, but just not as supportive. But they love this team, Ben, and they're rallying around these group of kids. They still think they can do something special, and even with the loss, even though it's disappointing, and you heard remarks like, well, we drove all the way up here for this, it's still some optimism that they can be refocused, and hopefully Will Wade can be quiet and just, you know, stay off stage left, so to speak, and let this team try to do something special while they figure out everything else in the future.
He is Raymond Parse III. You listen to him, 9 to 11. Rap Game with RP3. He joined us just now, and he's going to be with the producers tomorrow morning. Live coverage from Nashville. Keep knocking it out of the park, Raymond, and travel safe, especially when you come back.
Appreciate it, brother. Y'all have a great one, my man.
Putting in some work, right? He's on in the morning, the afternoon. He'll be back on tomorrow morning. We appreciate all the coverage for Acadiana Sports Station. All right, you've heard a lot about LSU hoops. You can still call in on that subject if you'd like. But I've got a question that'll take you in a different direction. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We only know one way. Full steam ahead on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Now we're music appropriate. We're about to talk about NOLA. And so we get a little bit of the big timers. Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next half hour, we're awaiting your phone calls. Join the show. I'm going to give you the latest Saints free agency signing. That's a hard thing to say. And then we're going to get your opinion on it. That move, Mario Edwards Jr., 25-year-old, versatile defensive lineman at 6'3", 280. He could play on the inside, little DT. He has experience as a defensive end as well. And kind of like everything so far in the offseason, the Saints have been able to accomplish it on the cheap. Two-year, $5 million deal the Saints have given Mario Edwards Jr., and there's an extra $1.5 million that could be tacked on via incentives, mainly tied to quarterback sacks. And so a young player in the league has suited up with the G-men, with the Raiders. The Saints are going to add him along to Malcolm Brown as far as the defensive line. Signees, we know that they have been able to bring back a number of players, Chris Banjo, Craig Robertson. Yesterday we learned that they are bringing back Teddy Bridgewater, trying to secure the future of the quarterback position, and Latavius Murray taking the place of Mark Ingram at the running back position. The one I forgot, excuse me, is that they are losing Alex Okafor, so that's where I think mainly Malcolm Brown comes into play. So now that you've been caught up to speed, the Saints' free agency moves so far, I'm going to see if you're satisfied with everything they've done.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day, you probably could have guessed it. Are you satisfied with the Saints' moves so far in free agency? Let us know. 706-0111. CD's got a call there. If he lets me know fast enough, and he has, we'll take it. I like letting a caller lead off. I got my own opinions, but you first. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Ken, you like what the Saints have pulled together so far?
Except for one thing. I'm ticked off because they traded Mark Ingram. I would have never done that. I don't care about the table, whatever his name is. Mark Ingram has proven what he could do with the Saints and betrayed him. I'm ticked off.
Ken, I'll say this. My understanding, and again, I trust Larry Holder of The Athletic when he speaks, my understanding is that's the agent's fault, that basically he wasn't willing to renegotiate with the Saints when they wouldn't go above a certain number. He went out and found that his client wasn't going to fetch much more of a number, and so that's what landed him in this situation. So I don't think the Saints were able to re-engage after one of their first offers.
Yeah, and secondly, Brentford, well, it's going to take, what, Final Four to take that interim tag off and be the head coach?
Yeah, for Brentford, I'm not sure it's quite Final Four, but I think it's a very steep uphill climb for him to be the full-time head coach after this season.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Ken, you know I appreciate it. We just got to find a way for some good stuff to happen with South Louisiana sports. Ken called in and had one of the best, most furious takes. Clint, was that Monday of this week? I don't even know where I am anymore, what day it is.
No, that was Friday, like right after the Will Wade saga really kicked into high gear.
It was a week ago today.
Yes. About this time, in fact.
Phenomenal, angry rant from Ken, which we may run back at some point. He's ticked off today because Mark Ingram's walking out that door. We need to do some things to make sure that Ken stays on the up and up with sports in South Louisiana. Of course, if he's satisfied and happy, he may never call the show again. So you can see it's a delicate balance. What do you think about this one? You liking what the Saints are showing so far? 706-0111. I'll jump in next. I'm going to swim here, but cautiously. Understanding they don't have a lot of financial wiggle room, yes, I am satisfied. Because I know they're not blowing through huge amounts of cash to go out and get Malcolm Brown, Mario Edwards Jr. But what they are doing is getting young players. Edwards is 25, Brown is 26, who we probably haven't seen their best football from yet. That is the important part. When you know that Okafor is out, when you know that Rankins is hurt, when you know that Onyemata got popped for a drug-related bust in New Orleans, when you know you have uncertainty outside of 94, you needed to put some hay in the barn along the defensive line. The fact that they've done it, found a replacement for Ingram, brought in a quarterback who can help them stay with their heads above water if Breeze gets injured at any point in this season, and they've still got some room left to maybe sign Ziggy Ansah or Jared Cook, because I don't think it'll be both. Yes, I'm going to praise them. I'm going to say that playing with the money they have, I'm satisfied so far because they're hitting on the right positions and they're doing it for guys that are still 25 and 26 years old. All right, let's get out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Keith, you like it what the Saints have done to date?
I'm loving it right now, Ben, and it's kind of a 360 because, as you can remember, a few years back, you know, they were just signing bad move after bad move. But ever since that draft class with Lattimore and Williams and those guys, they've continued down the youth movement, as you said, and they're hitting, they're spending wisely, they're bringing in depth, they're bringing in guys who are hungry to prove themselves. And it's all it's doing is just setting them up for a long run, keep on running that NFC South, and take your chances in the playoffs.
I completely agree, and I'm going to provide an example of what they could have done, and I'm so happy they didn't. Keith, have a great weekend.
You too, brother.
My man's in. Ken, Keith, we've heard from you. How about some more? YP, you people out there in listener land, holler at us, 706-0111. Adam Humphreys commanded, what, $9 million, I believe, a year to go to the Tennessee Titans. It was rumored that they loved him as a potential slot receiver, but that they thought of him more in the $5 million a year range. If the Saints would have shilled out like 2 years, $18 million, for a relative scrub like Adam Humphreys to fill a position that is important but not as important, I would have been upset. Furious, I'm not sure. Like Ken-level mad, I don't know. But I wouldn't have been happy about it, right? And so they're filling major positions of need. As Keith pointed out, they're doing it with guys who are young. and they've got a chance to catch them playing their best football, then those guys could fetch a payday later, as long as Drew Brees isn't Bobby Bonying the ship at some point in the next 2 or 3 years. But yes, if they had gone out and flashed the cash at a position that wasn't as important and overpaid for that guy, I think we'd all have just cause to be a little upset right now. Given the money they had to play with, yeah, I like exactly the moves that they've made so far, especially with Edwards and Brown. I could kind of take it or leave it with Latavius Murray, but if that's the type of Ingram replacement that you could afford with the dollars they had, so be it. Clint, you agree?
Oh, I'm in wholehearted agreement with you. It's definitely going to be a big thing for the New Orleans Saints to get things done and address a lot of needs. Sean Payton talked about it before, the NFL Combine, defensive line, running back if they couldn't get Ingram, and defensive end, and definitely tight end, probably one of the other big things that he was talking about back in the Combine just a couple of weeks ago. So right now, I am loving it because you've been able to hit on a lot of needs, and they're solid guys. It's not like, oh, hey, they're a bunch of jabrones. I mean, we got a guy that was a former first rounder, Malcolm Brown, and I'd say we got him on the cheap. I think that's huge for the New Orleans Saints.
So these names, right, aren't going to have people, you know, just jumping off of trampolines excited, right? I was going to say jumping off of bridges. That'd be the opposite.
Yeah, that'd be don't if do you that re-sign either. Brandon Browner.
Oh, why would you remind everyone of that?
I don't know.
Was Jairus Byrd not available in your memory database there?
Yeah, because, I mean, nobody really remembers Jairus Byrd and his run with the Saints. Everybody remembers more Brandon Browner because of all the penalty flags.
Yeah, but don't forget about how excited people were about. You know what? I'll give you the perfect parallel.
Yeah.
Jairus Byrd was Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
Right? Same exact thing.
Yep.
Same thing. Didn't want to be here. Quote, unquote, injured. Just get the hell out of town eventually. I think is how everybody felt. But you're right. The Brandon Browner thing definitely played out and was ugly. But as far as what the Saints have done so far, I like it. Ziggy Ansah began his visit last night. Time will tell what happens there. But I do wonder if the Mario Edwards Jr. signing makes that one less important. I'll tell you this. If the Saints find a way to finagle, which is a $10 word, not a $1 word, but if they can finagle Edwards and Brown on the D-line, Bridgewater back at quarterback, Latavius Murray at running back, and Jared freaking Cook, this will have been an A, borderline A-plus free agency period for the Saints. And then, oh, by the way, within all of that is Breeze deferring some money as well and taking one for the team in the short term. That's a more important position to me than going and getting a cheapo depot slot receiver. Find that cat in the draft this year. I know you don't have a lot of pieces to the puzzle in this year's NFL draft. Go find your slot receiver in the draft, right? Figure that out on the fly. I'm more concerned about the tight end position. I'd rather see them get somebody who's bona fide than take a chance on somebody with whatever it is. I think their third round pick or second round, whatever it is. I know it's not first. Their second day pick. There we go. I'll say that and have a little certainty behind it. I'd like to see if they can do some at the tight end spot. All right, we're going to take now our final break of hour number one. But don't forget, nominations still open. You could submit for your student athlete of the month. We're going to award one young man and one young woman on March 27th. That means that you've got about 11 days and some change. Your favorite student athlete from the high school level. Go to 1037thegame.com. You'll see the big ARTCO equipment logo. You can nominate, give a reason why you're nominating, and then we'll announce those on March 27th into this month. We'll do it in March, April, and May. It's the ARTCO equipment student athlete of the month on 1037 The Game. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports to you, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back in the saddle, back with more of the good stuff. You're listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Great guest list coming up. James Moran live from Alec Box Stadium in our next segment. We'll get an LSU-Kentucky preview straight up 5 o'clock. Danny Jones talking 2019 Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. That'll be 5:45. And Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots, all in on the Pels. And some NBA chatter as well at 6. Don't forget, Clint and I, we got to get out of here at 6:30. As you go back to Baton Rouge, I have to imagine it'll be Jeff Palermo and Doug Thompson. Chris Blair probably en route from Nashville. But it'll be LSU-Kentucky, 6:30, the pregame show, 7 o'clock, first pitch from Baton Rouge. That means if you want to get a call in right about now, would be a good time. Saints, free agency, you digging what they're doing. LSU basketball loses to Florida. They'll await their seeding fate Sunday afternoon. Let us know what you think. 706-0111. And we're heading out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, how are you today?
Hey, Ben, I'm doing good. I apologize for having to hang up yesterday. I had to take an important call. My bad.
Hey, never make your money. That's all I will say.
There you go. Thank you. As far as for the Saints, I'm just a Saints fan. I'm not a big-time Saints fan. My theory is as long as they have Drew Brees, they have a chance. So that's my thing with that. But I want to just ask you, Dave had a poll question this morning about LSU. Who would you rather have back, Javonte Smart or Will Wade? And I think Smart won by a bunch. Do you think people were wrong right there?
Yes, and that's not a slight to Javonte. And I think that's the answer that you almost were baiting me into, or maybe expected that I would give, right?
Yes.
And I'll tell you
You're
why.
You're 100% right.
I'll tell you why. T, go take that next phone call and make some money. I'll talk for a minute. Thank you, brother.
I got you, man. Thank you. Love your show.
You know, and we got time for more. 706-0111 when you're ready. Will Wade's presence with this team can't be understated. One loss to a pretty darn good and definitely a hungry Florida team shouldn't be overstated as well. So I'm trying to find that happy median. Because make no bones about it, Javonte Smart was really good offensively today off the bench, right? I mean, he comes into the game and ends up playing 31 minutes, gives you 13 points, shoots 5 of 7. He was a huge presence for LSU. They needed him today. Marlon Taylor started the game, only played 24 minutes, so clearly Smart was preferred in the backcourt rotation. But yeah, I think that Wade, what today was a nice reminder that for all the off-the-court BS, and I know that a lot of you feel that it's more Oliva, F. King Alexander, and LSU's fault the way this is going down. For the last week, we've been going round and round with that, and that's fine. But I think today was a really nice reminder that Will Wade is one hell of a bench coach. I'm never going to take that away from him, ever. What he has been able to do, pressing the right buttons late in games, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it before. And take what I'm about to say the right way. While I absolutely believe in divine inspiration, and while I believe that to an extent this team is touched by the hand of Wade Sims, right, and that he's on their minds and he is helping to propel them forward, the fact that they're winning these games late, I think, has a lot more to do with Will Wade being their head coach. So, again, I think you understand what I'm driving at there. I'm not minimizing the importance of what motivates these guys and playing for their fallen brother, but this is a team that has won late because they have grit, because their head coach trained them to be that way, beat it into them over 2 years running the program, and because he knows when to let them go and when to yank that proverbial chain. And that's exactly what I said off top today. You have to have some fear of your head coach in certain spots, or you have to have some fear that if you don't toe a line, your ass is coming out of the game. If you don't toe a line, somebody's calling a timeout, and you're going to get chewed out on the sideline. I'm not saying that Benford is incapable of those things. I actually think he got maybe a little overextended and emotional and got a T when it cost LSU pretty dearly. But as Raymond Parse III suggested when we interviewed him earlier, perhaps Wade, and the presence he commands from the officials on the sideline, perhaps Wade doesn't get that tee call in that spot. So, again, there's a lot of balance here for me because LSU lost to a good team that was incredibly hungry today, a team that's played the Tigers twice to overtime this year. So nobody needs to get too up in arms about the caliber of team that LSU just lost to. The problem is this. When you get into the big dance, they're all that good. A lot of them are better. There's no other way for me to put that. And so to answer T's question, do you need 13 points off the bench from Javonte Smart, or do you need your head coach that's going to keep people accountable in certain spots? Because Benford absolutely had that team ready to go. And I'll tell you this, one of the hardest parts I've always heard, the difference in the assistant and the head coach, especially in basketball, is designing that game plan. And I'm sure that transcends just basketball. I'm sure it's across sporting lines. Designing the game plan. It must be said that Tony Benford, with the assistance of Greg Heyer and company, designed one hell of a game plan today. LSU came out the blocks like Usain Bolt. I mean, they were rolling early in that game. It gets harder to sustain it. It gets harder to slam the door shut on somebody and to demand some of that accountability and, frankly, like I've been saying, to wield some of that power that occasionally results in fear. To where when you bark, your kids listen. They don't just say, you know what, it's time for us to do us. Because when Trey Waters freelances sometimes late in games, we've seen how that can go. There's the spectacular and there's the mind-numbing. Today was a little more of the mind-numbing. And so I know that LSU had a six-point swing that didn't go its way. But that's a really good point that T brings up. I think that you want Wade more than anything. And let me assure you, that's not going to happen. Wade will not coach this team again this year. There's just no chance to me that that development changes over this weekend. But Smart was allowed to play. Hey, good for the kid. I'm glad that he and his mom did everything they had to do to get him to this point. Does that mean that he, LSU, are out of the woods? I don't think by a long shot. But at least for those two, they'll be able to fight that battle after the season is over. Wade still isn't talking. He's not going to get to. And that, unfortunately, is the difference. All right, we've come to the end of hour number one. Let's put a stamp on it with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Ill-fated, and yesterday in New Orleans, Raging Cajuns men's basketball lost a nail-biter by one to USA. Their season is over, and it feels like one that was a little ill-fated. A lot of talent, yeah. Those juniors last year that set out the year prior from Power 5 schools were all seniors this year. A lot of excitement, but especially in light of the injury to Malik Marchetti, this team never was quite consistent enough to get where they needed to go. So Bob Marlin's group, not a bad season. It didn't live up to last year. Hey, when you lose Jonathan Stowe, Bryce Washington, that kind of thing can happen. But this year, stars didn't align, just a little more ill-fated. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back with James Moran on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
It's time to get you ready for LSU baseball. Step into the on-deck circle with James Moran on 103.7 The Game.
I love it when that fancy voice guy does my job for me. I appreciate the setup there, bro. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D, and joining us, like you just heard, aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, it is our friend James Moran, editor of Tiger Ag Magazine. How are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. Doing well. How about yourself?
look, I'm not having to cover Will Wade, LSU, on a day-to-day basis and write just paragraphs on that, so my life is better comparatively, I guess.
Well, you know, I'm not either. We got a guy that does that, Tyler Nunez. I follow him for any basketball stuff. I tend to not be that involved in the hoops. I got a football, baseball guy.
Yeah, look, I got a voice guy who introduces you. You got a guy who writes about your basketball. We're living right. All right, James, you are covering LSU Kentucky baseball. Is there just a switch that flips for this LSU program when they get into SEC play? And is that something that you can notice that's tangible?
Well, I mean, I think they certainly hope so. I mean, historically, it hasn't normally been at the start of SEC play. Normally, it's around the middle of April that this team tends to catch fire. At least that's been their track record under Paul Maneri. But I think they are. Look, I think they understand that this team's still a work in progress at this point. I mean, their pitching staff right now in particular, I mean, Zach Hess, he's the only one of them that's really feeling 100%, and he's yet to complete six innings as their ace. So they need a big start from him tonight. He's going to be matched up with Zach Thompson, who, if not the nastiest lefty in the SEC, he's one of them, which is obviously quite a concern when you think about that LSU and their three of their four best hitters being left-handed, and Smith, Watson, and Duplantis, and Cabrera. But the rest of the staff, I mean, Cole Henry, he feels good enough to pitch Saturday. That's a plus. He was great his last time out, but he only went four innings before his back stiffened up. And then on Sunday, you got Eric Walker, who he's obviously still coming back from Tommy John surgery. He's not quite right. Landon Marceau, just getting back into the weekend mix. He's probably going to piggyback off Walker, but he's obviously pitched in the midweek, so he's not exactly, you know, he just lost his rotation spot, so he's not exactly throwing the ball super well right now, but they're kind of hoping that these guys can rise to the occasion. Because, look, you know, you never want to make too much out of the opening weekend of SEC play. 30 games is still a long grind. But after this weekend, LSU goes to Georgia and goes to Mississippi State. Those are two top 10 or close to top 10 teams, and they're going to be playing back-to-back weekends on the road where they haven't proved they can win yet. I mean, they're 0-4 on the road so far. So what you want to see this weekend is LSU come out and take 2 out of 3. You acknowledge they're not hitting on all cylinders quite yet, but they're hoping that some guys can step up and rise to the occasion while they have the luxury of playing at home this weekend.
James Moran, editor of Tiger Rag Magazine, leads us off in the 5 o'clock hours all spring long on 103.7 The Game. All right, James, who are some of your biggest projected inning eaters outside of those three for the Tigers this weekend?
To me, the most important guy, for the two most important guys, I'd say 1 and 2, are Devin Fontenot and Mikhail Hilliard. Devin Fontenot has been a bit hit or miss this season, but I think what he did last Sunday against Cal was special. Coming in and going 4 shutout innings, only giving up 2 hits. He was throwing hard. His slider was good. He was pounding the strike zone. He's essential to me. Cause, I mean, though Todd Peterson struggles, and look, I still think Todd Peterson's the guy if this team has a lead and they're going to trust him, but I think Fontenot is going to be the guy they call on in a big spot to pick up some of that slack. And the other one is Hilliard. He has shown you that he can give you one really good inning. When he's tried to extend to 2, it hasn't really been the same success. Obviously, he's coming back from his own, you know, arm soreness and health issues. But I think those are the two guys, obviously, with Peterson still as the closer. And, you know, then there's going to be some guys like Matt Beck and guys like of that ilk that need to step up. They're also without Chase Costello this weekend, who, you know, he had that weird thing where they thought it was a blood clot. It turned out not to be, thank goodness, but he's still not feeling quite right. He won't pitch this weekend. I think they'll get him back next weekend. But for now, it's probably going to be the four guys, you know, the rotation plus Marceau with Fontenot, and maybe a little bit of Beck, Hilliard, and Peterson. That's really the guys they're counting on at this point.
James, what can you share with our audience about the progression of Brant Broussard back from that ankle injury, where he factors in this weekend, and then anything else they need to know about the infield?
Broussard is supposed to be healthy enough to go. That's what Paul Maneri said yesterday. Obviously, he sprained his ankle a little bit in that walk-off celebration last Friday night. I'll leave the jokes to be made to somebody else about a dog pile injury in March. But I don't think he's going to be in the starting lineup tonight. I think they like what they've gotten with Hal Hughes there. But obviously, he'd be great as a pinch runner, especially if he's as fast as he normally is, because he's probably the fastest guy on this team. Maybe him, DiGiacomo, and Zach Watson are pretty comparable. And it wouldn't shock me if you saw a game from him at second base sometime this weekend with not tonight. I think Paul and Eric said they don't plan on starting him tonight, but Kentucky's got some lefties. I think it wouldn't shock me if you saw a game with Hughes at third base and Broussard at second. But then again, Chris Reed's been giving them some really good at-bats, so maybe they'll just stick with him. But it's good to have Broussard back because, I mean, anything else, if nothing else, I mean, for injury reasons, for those kind of concerns, I mean, this team's short on depth with Gavin Dugas injured. He's really their only backup infielder besides, you know, I don't think they really want to play Drew Bianco a lot at second base. The boy, he's the better position's first base. So we're talking about, you know, if they need to pinch hit for Kyle Hughes or you know, pinch run for Chris Reed or something like that, or obviously somebody gets hurt, you don't want to even bring that up around this team. But he would be a guy that could step in and give them some innings at second base and, you know, allow the rest of the infield to shuffle from there.
All right, Clint, I'm going to get you to call him back just briefly. We can hear him, but he's going into a little different part of the matrix, a little warbled. I've got a few more that I want to lob his way, in particular on Kentucky and then on the SEC and maybe where LSU stacks up entering conference play this weekend. Again, the Wildcats in town to take on LSU, first game of a three-game set. 7 p.m. first pitch from the box. We're bringing you right to the pregame show at 6:30. And this is a little different vintage of Kentucky baseball. We know they've had the one pitcher who has grabbed a lot of headlines over the last couple of years. So we've got James back. And how would you, James, compare this year's edition of the Kentucky Wildcats to the last couple of seasons?
Well, they don't have they have a great pitcher in Thompson, so he's kind of taken the role of Sean Jelly, who was more of a, you know, he's more of a dominating guy than Jelly, who was more of a really intense sinker baller. But so that pitching staff's pretty similar, but the team is kind of built differently. I mean, Kentucky's been among the league leaders every year in home runs. They've been a team that a lot of extra base hits. This year's team, they're running, and that's really LSU's biggest concern going into this weekend. Kentucky has stolen, I think it was 46 bases in 55 attempts for comparison's sake. LSU is only 17 of 20. But LSU's opponents against them this year are 32 of 33, which has been a bit of a recurring problem. And you know, how that could manifest itself in a number of ways. And number one, LSU pitchers can't issue walks because those walks can become doubles with the way Kentucky runs, and then a bloop single is a run. It also means their pitchers are going to have to be quicker to home plate. I mean, a lot of the focus has been on Brock Mathis, and look, he hasn't thrown the ball great by any stretch of the imagination, but these pitchers have to be quicker. The coaches have to do a better job of throwing more pitch outs, throwing over to first base more, checking on runners more. And then when Bassis does get his chance, he's got to throw the ball better than he has. So to me, I mean, obviously, look, you're going to need to put some good at-bats against Thompson, but I don't think you plan on scoring a lot of runs against him. And with that in mind, you can't let walks and singles become doubles on the base path, because that's how this game can get out of hand and quickly tonight. And, you know, the only guy on this team that I think has really done a good job of holding runners is Walker. Hess needs to be quicker. The freshmen need to be more cognizant of the runners, all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of more of a group effort. LSU met about that yesterday and had a long conversation about things they can do to kind of work with it. But that's definitely a concern going into this weekend, because this isn't so much the, you know, try to get a couple walks and play for the three-run homer Kentucky team as they've had the last few years. This is more a team that is going to try to use their speed and make things happen when guys are on the base paths.
One more for James Moran on SEC baseball. Preseason, it was LSU, Vandy. They were considered the front runners. Obviously, Florida's there just about every year as well. Is there anybody else that's impressed you with the way they've gone to non-conference play so far?
Well, I mean, how can you not be impressed by Tennessee? I mean, I think they're 17-1 or something like that. I mean, now they did this last year, and then things kind of fell apart for them in SEC play. So you definitely want to see if they can maintain that now that the games become a little bit more difficult. But they've been impressive. Mississippi State's played a lot of really good baseball. I mean, really, aside from, you know, I think at this point 11 of the 14 teams are ranked in one poll or another. So it gives you kind of an idea of how deep and how strong this league is at this exact moment. But Tennessee's the one I've really got my eye on. I'm curious because of how well they played and how dominant they were in non-conference, if they can do a better job of translating that now that SEC play is beginning.
I'm going to squeeze one in, James, on your beloved New York football Giants, and it's a real simple question. Is anybody left other than Eli Manning and Saquon Barkley?
Oh, yeah, man. I was in favor of the trade. I know I'm in the minority, at least the minority among younger people on that, but I like it. I mean, this team has a lot of holes to fill,
and you having a wide receiver making $20 million doesn't really make a ton of sense to me. So you trade him, you get a couple draft picks back, you get a starting safety back in Jabril Peppers, who I kind of liked in college coming out of Michigan, to be honest with you. And, you know, you turn that cap savings and the two draft picks into three starters, and then obviously you have a fourth starter in Peppers. That's kind of how you rebuild the team. And like I said, this team's got a lot of holes in it.
Hey, never forget one thing about young people. Other than me and you, they're all stupid. So just don't worry about what they think.
I'm not going to go that far, Ben. Let's agree that the people on Twitter normally have some interesting takes to say.
Always, my man. I appreciate you doing this. We'll be following your coverage tonight at TigerAg.com. Thank you, James.
No problem, Ben. You have a good night, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
He's awesome, man. And young people are just kind of stupid, right? I mean, let's just shoot it straight here a little bit. And if we're going to narrow the scope down to young people who are on Twitter, good luck and God bless. We're going to hit our first break of the hour. Phone lines open. When we return, we got Danny Jones coming aboard exactly 30 minutes from right now. We got time to hear from you. And don't forget, Shamit Dua talking Pels in the NBA at 6 o'clock. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Yeah, we're kind of young, but we're learning on 103.7 The Game. Just about 20 minutes after 5 o'clock, back in and ready to roll. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Phone lines open. We got time for you. In fact, we'd love to hear from you when it comes to LSU basketball and where do you think the Tigers will be seated in the aftermath of a 76-73 loss to Florida SEC quarterfinals earlier today in Nashville. I say 3, but don't be surprised if it's a 4. I'll give more rationale. But brass tacks, that's where I'm at. You can also answer our sink or swim question of the day. Are you satisfied with the Saints' moves so far in free agency? In case you are just joining us, the Saints earlier today announced they've signed 25-year-old defensive lineman Mario Edwards Jr. Now, I say defensive lineman because at 6'3", 280, Edwards has had some experience, first with the Raiders, most recently with the G-men, playing D-end and D-tackle. And the Saints are getting him, relatively speaking, on the cheap. 2-year, $5 million. Now, there's an extra $1.5 million that could be tacked on with some sacks-based incentives. But think about what they've accomplished so far. They lost Alex Okafor, defensive end, head of the Chiefs, getting more money than they were willing to pay him. They're going to be without Sheldon Rankins for a while after tearing his Achilles in the middle of last season. David Onyemata's entangled in at least some kind of an off-the-field issue. Don't know if it will result in a suspension, but the possibility exists. Everything I just told you means they've got to stock that D-line, not only with talented guys who could start, but with some depth. And I think they've done that. A 25-year-old, as I mentioned, in Mario Edwards Jr., and yesterday they announced the signing of 26-year-old, might have been Wednesday, Malcolm Brown from the New England Patriots. And they're not breaking the bank to get these guys to New Orleans. That speaks, I think, to the destination that the Saints franchise has become, because they've got one of the three or four best rosters in all the league. So Edwards and Brown coming over on the D-line. They lose Mark Ingram, replace him with Latavius Murray. Re-sign Teddy Bridgewater. A couple of different role players that they're bringing back. Chris Banjo, Will Lutz, Craig Robertson. So they're doing some things that I think lead you to believe that they're accomplishing all they really can with the money that they've got, even with the $10.8 million that Drewby freed up by restructuring his contract. So if any or all of those topics seem like your fancy, give us a holler. We got time. I'm throwing shade in the next segment. Zion Williamson, come on down. At least Zion is a topic. Then Danny Jones at 5:45. But if you're ready now, we got time. We are ready. 706-0111. I think pretty unanimously we've agreed that the Saints deserve satisfactory marks. With the money they've got, they're attacking the positions they need, and they're getting younger while doing it. That's usually a pretty good recipe. As far as the LSU part goes, I'll go in a little bit more on my thinking. I've told you that I believe a 3 seed is most likely, but a 4 seed, you're not out of the woods with that, LSU fans. And the reason is pretty simple. if a local reporter, Amy Just, has been able to get out of the powers that be, that there's at least a chance LSU will be, and I'm going to use this verb, I just think it's the best one for the situation, downvoted. You could say downgraded. But basically, if their chances of hanging on to a seed that they deserve are going to be lessened because they're going to be without Will Wade, and they're having so much inner turmoil, at least within the athletic department, that there's some thinking it could affect the performance on the court, then don't be surprised if Friday suddenly a four seed becomes the issue. And, you know, part of my problem with that, you fall to that four line, and you are, I mean, a couple of heartbeats away from a Sweet 16 matchup with the one seed. Now, look, eventually you're going to play the big boys, and depending on how the seeding falls out, is having to take on number one Virginia really all that much different from having to take on, say, if you fall to the three line, number two Gonzaga in the Sweet 16? Gonzaga has a chance to fall out of that one line because they lost in the West Coast Conference tournament. And so if Gonzaga's a two, I mean, me personally, I'd much prefer to play against Tony Bennett in Virginia, especially if I'm LSU, than against Gonzaga. So you're going to face good teams. LSU has a penchant for playing very close games this season. They had another one today. And without Will Wade, I think there's at least some concern on what? How well they'll perform in some of those situations. I mean, right now there's a thought that Virginia, UNC, Gonzaga, and Kentucky might be the front runners for one seeds, but you can't rule out Michigan or Michigan State, Duke and Tennessee. LSU falls behind that in line, there's no question. But a three seed at this point isn't a given. All right, we're going to go back over to the Saints side of things to take our next call aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jonathan, what you got for us?
Okay, so my question is, do you think the Saints are in a position to draft Austin Moreau in the tight end position?
Oh, that's intriguing. Yes. But it's going to have to be, and you know what? Shame on me, Jonathan. I meant to look this up, and I don't have it in front of me. I know they don't have a number one pick. I think they've got a two and a five, if I'm not mistaken. So what I will tell you is this. I don't think spending a second-round pick on Foster Moreau is a prudent thing to do. And I'm not sure that you will get him if you wait until the fifth round. So if they find a way to move up and find him, I don't know. I'm speculating late third, early fourth. That'd be a hell of a move, in my opinion.
Right. Okay, so with the Saints' propensity to be able to make draft day magic happen, do you think there's a way that they can make it happen for a person of Foster Moreau's caliber?
Absolutely. Now, there's no doubt about it. Jonathan, I like the tree you're barking up here. The answer to your question is yes. They could absolutely make that happen. I think what's less likely is that the Saints trade up into the first round to get anybody this year. I think they've done enough future mortgaging at this point. But it's not mortgaging the future if you package up, I don't know, 5-7, 5-6 to get a 4, and that 4 becomes Foster Moreau. I think a lot of people would be pumped up about that. Now, is Foster Moreau going to make that huge of a difference on the 2019 team? I think that's a fair question, and I'm not quite certain about it. Great future play. I'd rather have Jared Cook right now. If I can have both, I'll start doing cartwheels. You don't want to see it, but I'll do the cartwheels. All right, let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tim, I got about a minute left. It's yours.
All right, just with the Will Wade situation, the Jeronte Smart situation, the league stuff and all that, I mean, does the tournament really even matter? Or, I mean, it's hard to get interested in something that, you know, may or probably won't count.
Well, I'll say this, just based off of the tone of your voice and the question you're asking, I think that you're in the minority of some of the LSU fans, at least that I've heard from, and at least the ones on social media. Because all I've been hearing for a week and a half now is go for broke. You know, if they vacate it, they vacate it. Let that be damned. I just want to watch the blaze of glory. But Tim is saying, if it's not going to count, do I really care? Again, I'll point you to an example. The Michigan fans probably still enjoyed the heck out of the ride of the Fab Five, you know. The SMU fans probably enjoyed the Pony Express while it was happening. If you watched LSU win four games and get to the Final Four, you'd probably enjoy it, but at what cost? They've protected themselves with Wade. I'll continue to say LSU's doing the right thing there. They've done their due diligence with Smart to the point where they feel confident putting him out there. And the NCAA has been around for some of that. So I think with Benford at the helm, Smart playing, let's see how the chips fall over the next 2 to 3 weeks. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Tournament action continues tonight in college.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
A couple of updates for you before we throw shade. One on LSU baseball, but I'll lead with a potentially bigger development with Ragin' Cajun's football. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Shame on me. In the midst of everything going on with LSU hoops, this one got lost in the shuffle, at least momentarily, but I've seen it now. I got to tell it to you. Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser reporting that Trey Regis, Cajun's leading rusher from a season ago, injured his knee Tuesday in the first spring practice the Cajuns have had in this 2019 spring session. Regis last year, 1,181 yards on the ground. And the report is this. He'll miss most of, if not all of this spring due to arthroscopic knee surgery. The quote from Billy Napier, it's a little bit of a minor issue with his knee, but we anticipate, Napier continued, a pretty quick recovery from that. So we may actually end up getting him back in the spring at some point, but it's something we need to go ahead and get cleaned up. So I don't like that this happened to Trey Regis, but I do trust the prognosis from Billy Napier there. And if he says there's a chance to get him back in spring, you could bet your bottom dollar the kid will be fine when they're going through a lot of their summer workouts and especially come August and fall camp. So, again, it's a scary player to have this happen to. It's a position where they're loaded. Don't get me wrong. They've got great options. I mean, kids that are proven behind Regis. In fact, some that even took the lead in games last year. So they've got an abundance of talent at the running back position. But Regis, to me, just too big of a difference maker to have injured. So it's not good that he's involved in this. But, again, with the prognosis from Napier, looks like it's not something you're going to have to lose too much sleep over. As far as LSU, we've got a starting baseball lineup that's been released. I'll give it to you quickly and then on to the shade. Leading off playing shortstop tonight, LSU. Kentucky from the box, SEC play. It'll be Josh Smith batting second, playing center, Zach Watson. A mighty Lion batting third, playing right field. It's Antoine Duplantis. Chris Reed, professional hitter, playing the hot corner, batting cleanup. Daniel Cabrera, the sophomore from Parkview. He'll bat fifth and he'll be in left field. Drew Bianco, DHs, and he bats sixth. Cade Beloso, first base, batting seventh in the eight hole. It's Hal Hughes playing second, and Brock Mathis catching, drops all the way to nine. All of that will be in defense of Zach Hess on the mound. All right, enough of that talk for now. How about your daily reminder? Really, it's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management top-down, starting with Mark, to help you create a vision and then fulfill it. You can also trust their professional installers inside your home. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. But don't hesitate. Go now to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all. For the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Other than possibly Will Wade, I'm not sure anybody's name is in the sporting news more these days than Zion Williamson. Zion's injured. Is Zion playing? Oh, he is back. And today, Clint found a little space for him inside Throwing Shade. Why is that, Clint?
Well, not as much him. It's actually the guy that was causing a lot of big talk in the world of sports today. And that is Frank Howard actually wound up allegedly tripping him up. Then again, a lot of video does show it looks pretty clear that he was trying to trip him up. And like I said, this isn't like the Texas A&M situation where it was just a Bruder film you had to wind up looking at. You can clearly tell it looked like he was trying to trip a man that's probably going to wind up making millions of dollars over the next several years of his NBA
career.
And
is coming back, very notably, from an ankle injury.
Yes. And thanks to his shoe blowing up, which is a whole different story for a whole different day, because Nike actually got him his own custom-made shoes so the shoes don't blow up again and Nike has a bad PR incident again.
I'm sure at this point Nike is basically wrapping a pillow around his shoes and duct taping the hell out of that bad boy. But I have seen the film. You're right. It's not quite Zapruder-esque, and there definitely was a trip that went on. But on to the subject of that LSU A&M football Zapruder film that you're referencing there, upon further review and zooming in, John Battle still smokes somebody. And I think we've seen that at this point from all the angles that we need.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Just straight cold cocked that guy. I love saying that word. We got to take our final break of the hour. Here's the good news. We're going back to back, two-thirds of the way, to a full-out Tommy Mansky here. We got Danny Jones coming aboard next, talking L.A. Open. Yeah, it's coming next week to Le Triomphe. Excited about that. Straight up 6 o'clock, we go to NOLA, Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots, not just Pels Talk, but we're going NBA-wide. LeBron James and the Lakers, can this work past this season? And then we finish off taking you under the dome. Heaven help us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Hello, Acadiana. Raymond Parks III here.
Here's your 103.7 The Game weather update.
A couple things to report right now, and that includes an accident at the intersection of East University Avenue and West Pinhook Road right by Cottage Landing. And then we also have an accident at the intersection of East Willow and Northeast Evangeline Thruway, not far from the Walmart on the north side. Currently, it is 57 degrees. Some rain out there in the Acadiana area, so be safe out on those roads today. We got more B2BS on the way.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Get in on the conversation. Call on the game hotline. 706-0111. 706-0111.
Quarter to 6 o'clock, you bet it's time to talk some golf, especially when some of the best you'll find on the web.com tour is coming to our fair city and area next week. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game to give us the lowdown and to talk some general shop. Let's get to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. He is the tournament director for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. It is Danny Jones. How are you, Danny?
I'm hanging in there. We're doing pretty good, though. We're looking forward to next week, and the official work week before is over now, so now some last finishing touches and get ourselves ready for Sunday at 3:30 and the rest of the next 8 days.
I'm sure you're wiped at this point, but I'm happy you're with us. Hey, I'm going to have a little bit of fun to get off to a good start. I found you on Twitter, dude. It took me like 3.5 years of doing this radio show, but I finally found at Wrangler Jones. How have you been hiding that from me for so long?
I'm not a big Twitter person. I don't tweet a whole bunch. That's normally where I get my sports and my news, and maybe occasionally drop a random comment here or there, or you know, something about Louisiana Open or whatnot. But I'm more on the ghost side of it, and just reading a lot.
That's fair. I just found it and it brought me joy, so I tagged you in the show today, and now the masses know. All right, let's get to the 28th edition of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Again, it's now presented by Mistras. How has the tournament grown in luster and become one of the top stops on the web.com tour over the years?
Well, I think something that really speaks for itself is the longevity of this event and what this community has been able to do. When you look at, 28 years now, that's what we'll be finishing next week. It's a huge testament to the Acadiana area, Lafayette and the surrounding communities to be able to host an event. You know, so many times people say our purse is only $550,000, which for a long time was one of the two stops that had the smallest purse on tour at $550,000. This year there's 9 stops with a purse of $550,000. I've told people, I said, listen, everybody that went to a huge purse increase, where are they now? And I don't mean that as a slight. I just, Lafayette knows what we can do. We do what we do. We try to do it as well as possible, make it a great event for the sponsors, the volunteers, the patrons, and the players, and then make a difference to the charities that are in Lafayette 52 weeks out of the year based on our one-week event. And we try to do what we do, and we try to do it as best we know how. And so I think it speaks a ton so that the players know that there's always a place to come in Lafayette, and we're going to be the little engine that could. And, you know, we're one of the smallest markets on tour, but we've done what we do for 28 years now, and I think it just speaks volumes to this area, because I always say in sports we talk about a person has it, and we can't describe it. This community has it. And I tell people, I lived in Austin and I grew up in back here in Lafayette. I truly believe I've lived in two of the greatest cities in America. And I don't just say that, but I think my hometown is a special place in the United States.
And to your point about the charity work, really incredible. The tournament, since its inception, has contributed nearly $5 million to local charities. So that can't be lost in the shuffle here. Danny Jones, our guest, he's the tournament director of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, presented by Mistras. And, yeah, it's coming to Lutrieoff next week. We'll be out there mornings, afternoons, with Acadiana Sports Station. And people love to watch players of the future. But one of the interesting things this week, Danny, and this kind of, this was eye-popping for me when I first saw it, you're going to have a past Masters champion, Mike Weir, that's playing the course this week. How'd that come about?
Well, we've had a past Masters champion play before with Larry Mize. It was a few years back. But not a lot of people, had heard of Larry Mize. Larry Mize was older when he got here. And Mike, I believe, is 48 now. So Mike Weir is playing in a special category of 48 to 50-year-olds. Or 47 to 49, I think. Not sure exactly. They've got so many different categories on the PGA Tour. So, he's playing the Web Tour. He's won almost $30 million on the PGA Tour. Obviously, the 2003 Masters champion. And so he's probably grooming himself to head to PGA Tour Champions, which is the old Senior Tour, the old Champions Tour. And so, look, it's an exciting name to have here. Mike Weir, been emailing him back and forth a little bit about some questions he's had, and super nice guy. I'm looking forward to meeting him. Ironically, my first Masters that I ever attended was 2003. He won it. I've got my flag since then. So we've kind of joked back and forth, and he's going to go ahead and sign it for me. As a kid, we were autograph people. Now it's just about the story and the fact that I work for an event that's going to host a former Masters champion. Just happened to be the first Masters I went to. So kind of a neat story and a lot of fun to have. And those are the kind of stories that I feel the Web.com Tour brings to a community, because the players are accessible. There's not, gallery 6 and 7 deep. Let's not kid ourselves. And so there's access to players. And outside of the time they're on the course, they're pretty open and willing to talk to and visit and sign autographs with kids and patrons and spectators that are just out here having a good time. So the accessibility of the Web.com Tour lends itself to really some family fun and an opportunity for people to enjoy. So a Mike Weir, a Boo Weekly, who is a crowd favorite pretty much everywhere he goes, will be here. He played on the Ryder Cup back in the 2000s. So obviously Mike Weir is the name, probably the biggest name we've had here since we had John Daly in 2013. And I think it's going to be an exciting time, and hopefully people come out and see. He's played really well so far this year. And I always tell people, if you can get some of these big names to make the cut, you never know what can happen over the weekend.
I love the deeper dive we've got here on Mike Weir. Not only a lefty, and I believe he's the second lefty I read up earlier to ever win the Masters, but a Canadian. So is there a chance that there could be some Cajun French spoke to Mike and he understands it? Is there any chance of that, in fact?
I don't know. I can ask him because, in fact, I have an email to respond to. I can ask. I don't know. I don't know what his full heritage is up being from Canada. He's... But that's an interesting topic to take. And
we can invite the locals to go out and try. We know that he's going to interface with them, but we'll see if he speaks French. We'll know soon.
Well, you just throw some French out there and see if he responds. And if he doesn't give you a funny look, then he probably doesn't know. If he looks at you and engages, then he probably knows a little bit, and he probably knows more than he'll let on if that's the case.
I'm right there with you. Danny Jones with us for another few moments on 103.7 The Game. Hey, before we go a step further, for the fans that want to come out, attend, let them know how they can get tickets. But then also for the fan that wants to come out and volunteer, I'm sure you've still got some room. Tell them how to do that as well.
First thing on tickets, you can, if you want to get them before you get here, you can call the Louisiana Open office at 593-8000. Get information at laopen.com. But if you want Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if you decide, hey, you know what, I want to bring my daughter, I want to bring my son, my wife and I are going to bring the kids out, you can drive straight up to the parking lot, and they'll take care of you at the front gate. The Knights of Columbus will be there collecting for parking and collecting tickets. So you don't have to buy in advance. We encourage you to come out and enjoy yourself. The weather, knock on wood, but after we get through this little precipitation we have going on this evening, the weather for the next 6 to 7 days, I don't want to jinx it, but it's going to be something special. And weather can make a golf tournament, and it's something that we can't control. So if you want to come out and join us Thursday through Sunday, if you want to come out and volunteer, we still have some needs for about 3 walking scores per day, which I think is the best job to be a volunteer if you come out as part of the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. Look, we understand not everybody can be a sponsor, but there's several people that come and donated their time, and sponsors and volunteers alike are going to help us go over $5 million this year in charitable giving since we started this thing back in 1992.
All right, we've talked about the development over 28 years, the big names, and you mentioned Boo Weekly as well. How about some of the young guns? And I'm not sure that you have any names tip of your tongue, but you have past examples, and you got plenty of them, of guys that came in and they started to make their bones at a stop like this, and you can look at them now.
Well, you look at a Kelly Kraft, who won here, I believe it was 2015. Kelly Kraft played at SMU. He's gone on to, he hasn't won, but he's been at the top of the leaderboard several times in the last couple of years. Wesley Bryan, who won here in 2016, I think I'm saying that right, 2016. He's, he went on the next year to win the Heritage and got a chance to play at the Masters. I really think the coolest thing about the Web.com Tour, and especially where we fall on the schedule, and the first time in maybe forever, we weren't the first domestic stop. There was an event in Sarasota, Florida a month ago. So we're the second domestic stop in the United States after 4 international events. But we're early enough in the year where now for the next 20 events, basically, you're going to be able to see guys here. You're going to be able to meet guys here. Your kids are going to be able to get autographs from guys here that you will be able to follow. And no doubt you will see on some major network, whether it's NBC, one of the other major networks, wherever it is, you're going to see these guys the rest of the year playing on the PGA or the Web.com Tour, trying to get to the PGA Tour. But you will see some of these names interchangeable on major networks throughout the year. And I think that's the fun part of being so early in the season.
I need you to make sure to bring my helicopter so I can get out to the trailer Monday through Friday next week. But I'm excited about being on the grounds. Lutryoff is beautiful. I love getting out there, Danny.
Well, it's been, they've been our only home. And our partnership with Lutryoff Golf and Country Club, I think, it says a lot again, about the owner of Lutryoff Golf and Country Club, Mike Maray, and his commitment to the Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras, because not many events can say they've had the same golf course for their entire history, especially when your history spans 28 years. So we've got a beautiful facility. They've made some major upgrades. They've just finished last week almost $2 million irrigation renovation to the entire golf course here. They've redone part of the clubhouse. They've redone all the landscaping around the clubhouse. So, again, there's never a good time to make some of these renovations on the golf course, and we've got a beautiful piece of property here that they do a remarkable job with. It's going to be better a year from now than it is today because of this irrigation, but I truly believe we've got a very fine facility and one that I think the players enjoy playing and gives an opportunity for some low scores. And, we all say defense wins championships, but everybody knows that offense sells. And so you see players attacking pin flags and trying to make birdies and eagles can make for a lot of fun and some good drama down through the weekend.
Danny, a bit under the gun time-wise, but one more time, that number for people that are listening, they want tickets.
593-8000, 593-8000. We'd love to have you as a spectator. If you want to donate your time, come out and volunteer and be a part of the 28th Chittimacha Louisiana Open presented by Mistras.
Danny Wrangler Jones on Twitter, and we found him. And we'll see you next week out of Lutrion, brother. Thank you.
Look forward to it.
I love it. Social media presence, just kind of lurking when it comes to Twitter. But I can tell you this, our guy and their whole team put on one heck of a show. If you've never been out there, you need to come join us. All right, we got to sign off for hour number two. When we return, Shamit Dua, Bourbon Street Shots, Pels, Lakers, NBA, and who might not be in the running for GM in New Orleans that should be? Think on that. Shamit will answer it when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll. Hour three of three. Wow, it's been a busy day and week, but Bumper to Bumper Sports, we're back, and we got your back as well on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And yeah, Clint's going to talk on Cajuns baseball at the bottom of this half hour. But we got to lead off talking some NBA, talking some Pels. Can't completely neglect the professional basketball franchise in this state. I know, a lot of things going on with LSU hoops, but let's head out to New Orleans. And aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, he's always here when we need him. Shamit Dua, lead writer, Bourbon Street Shots, and a mod for NBA Reddit. How are you, Shamit?
I'm doing great, enjoying this gloomy Friday outside.
Yeah, it's been the same, I think, all around South Louisiana. I'll start with a less than gloomy topic, and this occurred to me today. I don't think it's quite apples to apples, but Drew Brees obviously is just lionized, right, in New Orleans and throughout Louisiana. He's been the savior for the Saints franchise. I don't think it's fair to put Drew Holiday in the same breath, but make the case for how beloved that he is and maybe even underappreciated Drew Holiday for this Pelicans franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a little unfair to both athletes to compare Drew Holiday to Drew Brees just because of how long Brees has been in the city and, you know, the fact that he's won a championship and all of that. But that doesn't understate the fact that Drew Holiday has been the heart and soul of the Pelicans and has made himself into one of the top guards in the NBA. You know, a lot of people talk about how he's underrated, but at this point, he just is elite. He's one of... I can't say that there are five guards in the NBA that are having a better season than he is, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, he's a guy that the whole team really, really looks up to. And I actually had a chance to ask a couple of the players, you know, how Drew has been leading them over the last couple of months. And, you know, you talk to anyone and they'll say, like, Drew is the ultimate team guy. He's their everything. And he comes in every single day. And he leaves it all out on the floor, and he truly leads by example. And I think his teammates are behind him no matter what.
Shamit, we will get back to this year's team, I promise. But there's a bigger picture topic I know that many are following, and you've got your fingers on the pulse, and that's the next general manager. Dell Demps has been done now for the better part of a month. I'm not sure that there is any traction, but what, if anything, can you tell us on that search and maybe a name or two that you're hearing or that you'd like to see thrown out a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think prior to this week, there was radio silence, so to speak, on how the search is going. But I think if you guys follow Scott Kushner of The Advocate, he recently said the search firm is expected to produce a list of names for ownership by early as next week. And from there on, they're going to conduct their interview process. I've been asking around. There are a few names to watch for, and I think Trajan Langdon of the Brooklyn Nets is a hot name. I think, you know, people mentioned David Griffin. I think that he was part of the initial reports. Although he would be a really big get for the Pelicans, I think he's really picky about where he likes to go, so I wouldn't hold my breath about acquiring him. You know, he recently turned down a job with the New York Knicks, And so, you know, I think there's been no other GM that's turned down as many jobs as he has. So, you know, don't hold your breath for David Griffin. And there's another guy I think people should watch out for is Gerson Rosas of the Houston Rockets. And I know, you know, most people have probably never, you know, heard of these names, but this guy has been a longtime executive with the Houston Rockets. He's been there for 17 years. He's the executive vice president of basketball operations there. He's Daryl Morey's right-hand man. He played a huge part in building Houston what it is now, and he has a tremendous background in international and domestic scouting. So, you know, those are the type of things that the Pelicans really need to usher in the next era is, you know, a focus on developing players, a focus on the draft, and, you know, coming from an organization that is as analytically minded as the Rockets, you know, finding those edges, those diamonds in the rough, you know, that's what the next GM should be doing for this team.
Very interesting. So maybe a number two in command to Daryl Morey over in Houston, a guy that's not being floated out enough. The Pelicans, tonight, they'll be at home. They welcome into the big blender the Portland Trail Blazers at 30-40. I guess, how would you rate this team's form since everything really shook out from the Woj bomb on Anthony Davis, the back and forth that kind of played out behind the scenes, right? Adam Silver in the NBA, Gail Benson in the Pelicans. How would you rate their form since things got at least a little bit more normal, say about 2.5-3 weeks ago?
Look, I peg them as survivors. They go out there and they battle every night. They won a lot of games that they had no business winning. They, you know, they were in a lot more close games. I think, you know, like we said, Drew Holiday has been a big part of that and a big part of why people are sort of confused as to, you know, what is this team doing? Are they trying to win? Are they trying to lose? What's going on? And, you know, Drew finally, he came down with an injury of an abdominal strain to where he's been, benched for until he recovers. And, you know, we probably won't see him for the rest of the season. And the team is finally starting to lose games in big amounts. We lost kind of big to the Toronto Raptors. They lost big to the Milwaukee Bucks recently. And so, and then that's no fault of them. There just isn't that much talent on the field anymore. But I think at this point, the team is in full evaluation phase where with the young players, and they don't mind if they accrue a few losses in the process, if it betters their odds in the lottery.
Shamid Dua, Bourbon Street Shots, our guest for another few moments on 103.7 The Game. If you're not following him on Twitter, here's how you do so, and you should as soon as you're done driving. At Fear the Brown is his Twitter account and the handle for his employer, one of them, at Bourbon Street Shots. All right, that game tonight we mentioned against Portland, not exactly a tremendous matchup, but how could they come out on top and start to maybe even give a little bit more faith?
So, you know, I think with the Portland Trailblazers, it starts and stops with Damian Lillard. We're very familiar with how the Blazers play because the Pelicans matched up with them in the first round of the playoffs, you know, in route to a sweep. Obviously, without Drew Holiday, matching up with Damian Lillard becomes a little bit difficult, so Alfred Payton will have his hands full, but they have a lot of players who've had a really solid season. I mean, there's a reason Portland has been a great team this year. And I think Yusuf Nurkic, their big man down low, has really been effective against opposing big men, and he's been good on both sides of the ball. So the Pelicans will definitely have their hands full with him, especially, you know, if Davis isn't playing. I don't think if the word is out yet if Davis is playing or not, or, you know, if Davis is in limited minutes, you're going to have Cheick Diallo and Jahlil Okafor battling with Nurkic down low. And they'll definitely have their hands full with him.
Shamit, you and I have talked a good bit about life beyond this season for the players. You've given your take on a couple of the guys, the imperative nature of bringing back Holiday. You're a little more so-so on a guy like Julius Randle. Where does Elfrid Payton fit in? And a lot of local fans here in the Hub City will want to know, how about a former Raging Cajun? Does he have some sticking and staying power with this franchise?
So I would like to see him stay. I don't think we saw enough of Elfrid this year. He's missed a huge chunk of time to the point where, you know, I don't think he's outpriced himself from the Pelicans market. So I don't think there's going to be teams just like, you know, knocking down the door trying to sign Elfrid Payton at midnight with large contracts. I think the Pelicans could probably bring him back on a reasonable deal. And I think that might be in the mutual interest of both parties. But obviously, you know, this is all up in the air with whenever new management comes in. But I like Elfrid. I think obviously Elfrid enjoys being home. And, you know, he's had back-to-back triple-doubles in the last couple of nights. So I think he's a very useful player and a great guy to boot. So I wouldn't be opposed to bringing him back. And I don't think he'd be terribly expensive.
I'd love your view from the outside, Schmidt, of these Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James. And the Kang is starting to take a bunch of heat. One, because they're going to miss the playoffs. But two, this whole rhetoric of come to town, get rid of all the young pieces, have Magic, Pelinka, trade for a big gun. How do you evaluate this year for the Lakers and LeBron? And do you think this whole vision comes to fruition for them starting in the offseason?
I mean, I don't think you can evaluate it anything other than it being a total disaster. You have the best player in the world, so to speak, and you are now having discussions of shutting him down so you can further your lottery odds. I mean, I think that's frankly embarrassing. They should have made the playoffs, and this whole gambit of, you know, we're going to trade all our young guys for Anthony Davis, you know, it blew up in their face. It showed the relative inexperience of their front office. It showed the incompetence of their ownership group, who apparently didn't have any idea what was going on. And obviously, it kind of showed that how desperate LeBron is for getting a guy like Davis to help him out so he can succeed in going to the playoffs in a city like L.A. So I don't think this is a measure of success for them by any means. They wasted one full year of LeBron James, and I think they're on track to waste another year next year if the summer doesn't pan out for them. And if you're a free agent and you're looking at everything that went down this year, like how can you – sell yourself on the idea of playing next to an aging LeBron James? I mean, he's not getting any younger. He suffered an injury that took him out for a significant time for the first time in his career this year, and I don't think those things are going to get more friendly going on. And how can you sell yourself on that idea and playing with that type of a media mess that's around that? And plus, knowing that, you know, if LeBron is done with you, he's going to effectively get rid of you for someone else. And so, I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough task because a lot of major teams are going to have a lot of cap space to pursue some of the same free agents that the Lakers want to pursue. And we'll see. I guess maybe they can attract someone, but I'm hoping they won't, and I don't think they will.
It is one thing. Look, I'm right there with you, because it's one thing when your employer tells you that you're expendable. When your teammate does that with his words and his actions, yeah, that's got to sting a little bit. Schmidt Dua has been joining us, and Schmidt, I'll never forget when you were first recommended to me in the program. I'm so glad that our guy did this in Jake Madison. So let's have a little bit of fun at his expense. Jake Madison says that he is a lookalike of Jose Calderon. Is that like 10 out of 10 comparison for you?
I think it's like 8 or 9. It's a pretty high, you know, likability. Like it's almost scary when you think about it. And you put their two images next to each other, and you're like, okay, yeah, no, this is they could be. It could be doubled for each other. You could put Jake on the court, and they'd be just as bad as basketball.
We may have to get some DNA tests done there. Schmidt, as always, this was very well done. We'll make sure that Jake gets this audio. Enjoy the heck out of your weekend.
Absolutely. You too, man.
And you got to love that, right? Straight NBA scoop, LeBron, Jrue Holiday, next Pels GM, and flows right into some collective, good-natured, but still good ribbing of somebody we know when it comes to Jake Madison. I know the last thing on your mind today was probably the Pels, but look at us. We covered that base for you. We've had so much more, obviously, today. First 2 hours has been very heavy into LSU basketball. Touched on the fact that Bob Marlin, UL, Raging Cajuns basketball are going to be done for the season. And wouldn't you know it, we've got LSU baseball coming up on the other side of our show today. UL baseball on the road. Clint will talk about that in a hot second. We fit a little golf in today, too. Danny Jones in the Louisiana Open. It's all been a blast. But make sure you save room for everything that's coming next week. Once we know where everybody is seated, getting back to the college basketball game, the madness will truly begin. I'm excited about it. We've had plenty of chatter so far. Is LSU a definitive 3 seed? I think all signs are pointing toward probably, but I wouldn't slam the door shut on it. I wouldn't rule out 4. I would rule out 2. But if there's been this sense that a downvote could happen, and this is one of the biggest things I shared with you in hour number 1, oh boy, I hope LSU doesn't fall to that 4 line. I just don't think it's entirely impossible. One thing that's not only possible, it's happening. We're in our final break of the show. When we return, Under the Dome with Clint Domain. It's a segment that the women absolutely demand from our station, so we give it to them. Bumper to Bumper Sports, giving it to you. Coming right back on 103.7 The Game. back in? Yeah, we're still coming at you in waves. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love, the famous Clint D, he's about to get active on 103.7 The Game. Our thanks to Shamid Dua. You need some Pels, a little NBA conversation to break things up in your life, and our man always delivers. Before we get to Clint, his star turn, a reminder, the Weekly Reboot podcast. Yeah, it's growing in popularity. How do I know that? I get the metrics. I can see. And I think last week's topic, my thoughts on what we know and what I believed at that point on Will Wade, I think was pretty well received, even if you disagreed. Trust me, the numbers show that. Keep listening and then tell a friend that his friend needs to listen as well. It's the Weekly Reboot podcast. You wake up Monday morning, doesn't matter how early, it'll be ready for you. About 10 to 15 minutes long, perfect for the commute into work, a lunch break, what have you. And you can find it, 1037thegame.com and the free 1037thegame mobile app. In either case, click or tap on demand. The Weekly Reboot podcast is brought to you by my friends at the Cigar Cove in Broussard. All right, with that out of the way, it is time that we clear a path for Clint Domingue. And we've gone off on a lot of topics today and throughout what's been really a tumultuous week. One thing we haven't discussed ad nauseum, Cajuns baseball. We did Monday, and we do every single Monday with our good friend Jace Conrad. But Clint, I want you to go a little deeper here. I want your take, now that we're entering Sunbelt Conference play, about where things stand and just where the Cajuns may fit Tony Robichaud's group in the pecking order. Enough of me. Let's get to you.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
It's a strange time to be a fan of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns baseball team. Why am I saying it's a strange time? Well, it's been a rough start to the season, to say the least. Going 7-10 heading into a big road trip against Little Rock. Why am I saying it's big when you look at the Sun Belt Conference standings? It doesn't look like a big one. But here's the thing. Conference play starts. That's where you're making the good chunk of your money. That's how you're going to get your hay done and be able to really try and make yourself worth it when it comes to the NCAA college baseball tournament coming up in a couple of months. But you look at this. They're up against the Trojan team that's 5-12 to start the season. That's a big silver lining for me. That's a big silver lining. And I'll tell you why. Because of the fact that you can have this be a 3-0 start to conference play, but it's not necessarily a given. I have to say a big reason why is because this is a similar team to last year. They were able to overcome some of their issues and win the West Division for the first time in its existence, which really hasn't been that long. It may seem like a familiar place, but it's not the same spot that they were in last year. Is the way last weekend ended, I think that's a big reason why I'm a little bit more concerned, because of the fact that the Cajuns haven't been able to get it done against teams that they're supposed to get it done against, like Loyola Marymount. That's a team that you should have been sweeping. Don't get me wrong, Loyola Marymount looks on paper to be a better team than I expected them to be, but it's still something that you can look at and say, hey, maybe, just maybe, that's a big issue going forward if you're a Cajuns baseball fan. A 3-0 start in conference action could be just what the doctor ordered, but it won't be easy considering we don't know what the rotation is going to be beyond Gunnar Leje tonight. Dalton Horton has been solid, but perhaps Brandon Young could usurp that role based off of his performance last Friday. Maybe Brandon Young will be the Sunday guy. Austin Perrin can wind up being in the bullpen. Our pets' heads are falling off everywhere in between. But I have to say, I think that's the biggest thing, is can you get it done? Can you get it done against somebody like that? Can you be able to finish the job and get things done offensively? Can you be able to do what you need to do to be able to be successful? The biggest key is the bats. I understand I was talking about the pitching, but I think the bats need to be away, because if you have a guy like Gunnar Leje straight dealing, that bullpen needs to be able to have some insurance to be able to come away with a huge series win. That's the biggest thing for me. That's the biggest key of them all for me, is outside of Michael Lomon, that bullpen's been hit or miss, and the Cajuns have a hard time getting it done on the road to open up conference play against Little Rock.
Try to stop Clint Domingue from talking Cajuns baseball? You just can't do it. One thing you can do, you should do, you should join us on Sunday. Tell your friends, tell your family to come as well. We're going to have a bracket reveal watch party, and we're going to celebrate the hell out of St. Paddy's Day. Let's tell it like it is. It's all happening at Pete's on Johnston this Sunday. The reasons for sports, I shouldn't have to explain to you. You're listening to a sports station, you probably know. We'll get the brackets starting at 5 p.m. Great. We'll have opportunities for you to win Astros tickets. All right, that actually is pretty darn cool. But the biggest and best reason to come, the chips at Pete's, the two-for-one beer specials at Pete's this Sunday, and select vodka spirits, two-for-one, buy one, get one free drink style. We're going to have a very, very large time this Sunday at Pete's on Johnston. Wear your green. We'll see where the purple and gold are seated, and we'll eat and drink until our hearts are content. This is going to be a great watch party. Yeah, we're throwing it at Acadiana Sports Station, but the host with the most, that is Pete's on Johnston. They've been doing this since 1968 for a reason, and they've been better than ever recently. If you've had the debris fries, you know what the heck I'm talking about. If you love the little Pete's, even that big old Pete's like I do, you're going to have a good time. Just come out and join us for our bracket reveal watch party, wink, wink, because we're doing other things, like celebrating St. Paddy's Day Sunday unofficially. The party starts at 5. I'll be there earlier. Come out and join me and everybody here at 103.7 The Game when you get a chance. All right, tip of the cap to everybody who stopped by this program today. RP3, that's Raymond Parse III, James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine, Danny Jones, and you just heard from my boy, Shamit Dua. For all of them, for all of you, and for the famous Clint D., my name is Ben Love. You've been listening to Bumper Sports, LSU, Kentucky Baseball. It's SEC action, baby, and it's coming at you on 103.7 The Game.